You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Well, Mike Brennan, at least. Matt is taking a vacation day, so I'll do the best I can. And we have calling in from Plymouth, Bob Liskus. Almost did it wrong. Vice President of Manufacturing Services for the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center. And, Bob is going to be talking about some new manufacturing courses that the center has developed, and I think are just starting to offer. Right, Bob?
That's correct.
All right. So tell us a little bit about what exactly is the manufacturing process development?
Well, manufacturing process development is a two-day training course that consists of four half-day sessions. To be exact or specific on those four-day half-day sessions, it's on the quality management system, or QMS, what it is and why you are part of that, lean manufacturing and how it plays in the role of the manufacturing environment, problem-solving skills, and then the culture and the motivation side of what it takes to collaborate and teamwork within the manufacturing environment itself. They're foundational, they're understanding of the processes themselves, but overall, it's what makes a operation successful. The instructors or the facilitators here have designed the course to be very interactive. It's such that it's hands-on activities. How do you get involved? How do you touch, feel, and understand the manufacturing environment and what role you play to be value add to the overall environment itself.
And so who is the course designed for?
Most of the course itself has been initially designed for individuals that have been on the job less than a year and those that need a refresher on basic practices. It can also include employees or staff members that for onboarding of new employees. And it's a great solution for employees who want to be cross-trained and be flexible to be utilized within and out of the manufacturing environment to understand what role they play.
Okay. And why did you develop this course?
Well, when we're out working with clients, one consistent challenge that we hear over and over again, and it's we see it as something that's growing dramatically, is that they need qualified, skilled workers. And there's a tremendous talent gap and work shortage facing the manufacturing here in Michigan and across the nation. It's really kind of a perfect storm with record low unemployment, large number of baby boomers retiring, at least in the next 2 to 4 years, and years of disinterest and general lack of understanding about the manufacturing process or the manufacturing environment by the younger generation. So a significant reason for developing the course is to train newer employees who aren't familiar with foundational concepts in manufacturing, and in doing so, helping to bridge the skills gap that is limiting the growth of manufacturers today.
Let me ask you, you referred to it as foundational skills and whatnot. What exactly is that? I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, a lot of individuals, when you talk about foundational skills in itself, what is a quality management system and what role do they play within a quality management system and what's the value add? So when we're talking foundational, why does a good business or an operation function very well? And typically it's because of the understanding amongst the workforce of what a quality management system can do for a business. When it comes to lean manufacturing, how can we do things better, quicker, assist the workforce in being able to do a better job for the business itself? And in today's environment, when we talk about foundational, problem solving is probably one of the most foundational skills that most people have a level of understanding but do not know how to follow through and being able to come up with solutions. And the last part being foundational for the culture and the motivation is, you know, today's environment is quite mixed, both from the younger generation and the older generation, and a big gap. How do you take that talent, that legacy information, and be able to transform that to the staff themselves or the younger staff and be able to use it in an effective way to keep the business growing?
Okay. And so how will this benefit a company that sends someone to this course? What do they get out of it?
Well, we'll enable a company to evaluate or elevate and broaden the skills of the staff overall. It will give them a good jump start for those employees who don't have experience in manufacturing, which we're getting fewer and fewer of. It also provides a company flexibility where it's easier for an employee to work in multiple areas and easier due to reduced learning curve, seeing how they fit within the manufacturing environment. And studies have shown that employees who receive professional outside training appear to be a more sustainable workforce and a workforce that is a happier workforce, that they know what value and purpose that they bring to the manufacturing environment.
All right. So what makes this course different from other training that's available out there?
Well, the course is comprehensive to a degree. When I'm saying comprehensive, it's the fact that, let alone that you learn, it's that it's hands-on, it's application. It's the ability to try this on a co-worker. It's the ability to apply it when you get back to the job itself. I'm talking about the manufacturing job or the manufacturing environment. The focus is a mix of operational systems and soft skills, so participants will gain an understanding of the importance of delivering a conforming product and how to reduce those costs, as well as solving problems and building a positive culture within the workforce, which we believe is of need by our manufacturers of today.
And I imagine that this isn't a free course. There's probably some sort of fee for it. What are you charging for this course?
$9.95 when we put the groups together, of which the course itself, the first one, will be ran, and we've done a pilot. We'll be running here in the December timeframe.
Oh, in December. Okay. That was my next question, is had you done this before? So this is brand new, right?
It's brand new. We've tried it both internally and with a group of what we'll call individuals who are looking to join the manufacturing environment to get that pilot and that feedback of what are we missing or what did they not gain from it. And it's become very positive. It's been received very positively. And they said it adds a lot of value to them even looking at the market today and wanting to be part of the manufacturing environment.
Let's talk a little bit about the center. Now, this may be the first time that folks have heard of the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center. So talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. I know you guys have been around for a long time. I've visited out there, but what is it all about? Why don't you tell folks?
Well, the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center has been around for about 22 years now.
Wow.
And we used to be at the North Campus of U of M, and we used to write individual papers and understanding and do the market research for industry. And then we moved more towards offering the type of services that our client base used, especially the small to medium-sized companies. And through, or by definition, we're part of the MEP system, or Manufacturing Extension Partnership. There's a center like us in every state in the United States, and we're part of the NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technologies, which is part of the Department of Commerce. So we're able to leverage knowledge all through the United States and understand what it is that is necessary or needed to make manufacturers more profitable, more appealing, and keeping manufacturing well and alive here in the U.S. And we're also a strategic line item for the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, part of the MEDC. And we serve them in a way that we offer the different services to the manufacturers in Michigan to keep that attraction going and to be able to keep businesses here attracting employees and businesses to Michigan and being able to set them up to be cost-effective and a value add to the state overall.
So
we here,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Keep going.
We here in Plymouth, we have is considered the main office, but we have a satellite office in or a what we call a subrecipient in Grand Rapids, one in Traverse City, one in Saginaw at Saginaw Valley State University, and one up in the Upper Peninsula.
And besides the MEDC, who are some of the underwriters of what goes on there?
The NIST is one of the we only have really two underwriters for the state of Michigan, and several of the MEP centers do not have state support. We are fortunate enough to have that, and we have the NIST or the Department of Commerce, who's the other underwriter for us.
Okay.
And we have the revenue that's generated from our clients that we work with around the state of Michigan.
Yeah, I know. When I've been out there, it seems like there's a lot of people taking some kind of training course or something going on all the time, right?
That's correct.
So
we have
we
have courses in the areas of all quality management systems, whether it's medical device, aerospace, automotive, laboratory, medical. We have lean manufacturing programs as they apply as a lean manufacturing certification champion. We have Six Sigma, whether it be Lean Six Sigma, yellow belt, green belt, black belt. We have cost management systems. We have leadership management programs. And we have overall consulting services that we offer throughout the state of Michigan.
And how many folks go through there in a typical year? How many folks do you work with? Is it hundreds? Is it thousands?
We typically, through the state of Michigan, I'm using the number through the state of Michigan, that we touch anywhere between about right around 200 clients, meaning companies, a year. But when it comes to employees, when it comes to staff members or individuals, it's probably up around the state of Michigan, probably somewhere in the vicinity of 1,200.
Oh, nice big number. And we got just a couple of minutes left, but manufacturing in Michigan, obviously we're still a manufacturing state. We may not have as many bodies plugged into manufacturing as we did, say, 10 or 15 years ago, but this is really important to the state of Michigan to make sure we have those skills, right?
That's correct. With still 12,500 manufacturers here in Michigan, it is still the leader of you know, businesses that are operating here in the state of Michigan, and it's very critical to the overall operations for the state of Michigan.
All right, let's tell folks a little bit more about how they can get more information about this course that you're offering. When it starts sometime in December, what, do you have a starting date in December?
Yes, we do. The starting date is December 4th and 5th, and because of the demand, I'll call it, and interest on it, we've scheduled one for December 11th and 12th also this year. So we got the 4th and the 5th and 11th and the 12th. You're able to go onto whether you're online at www.mmtc.org or www.the-center.org. We go by the-center.org or the MMTC, and you can go online and look this up, or we can contact an individual, can either through their business or as an individual, contact the our business here, and they will be able to assist you in any way to ensure that you get the training that you need.
All right. That's Bob Liskus, Vice President of Manufacturing Services for the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center. Well, the headquarters are in Plymouth, although there's other facilities around the state. And he's talking about a new manufacturing course that's starting in December. So if you want to get your employees trained how to do manufacturing right, check it out. But right now, we're out of time for this segment. This is Mike Brennan, and we want to say thanks very much, Bob, and we'll be right back.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Mike Brennan. We're back with the second segment of M Squared TechCast. Matt's on vacation today, so just me, but I'm not alone. We have in studio, doesn't look like Jessica. I'm thinking that.
No.
I was going to say there's been a radical change in a week or 2 weeks since I saw Jessica. But Dave is filling in for Jessica today. And we also have Mike Balazis from Red Level Networks, who's in studio, one of our sponsors. And he's the Microsoft Solutions Manager. He's going to be discussing something called digital transformation. So what is digital transformation?
Well, in simple terms, every business is a digital business, and the importance of technology as a driver for business has never been greater. If we think about it, everyone uses some kind of digital device to either connect or run their business. So this is especially important when there is an outage or other business impact. So everyone wants the ability to connect from any device, anywhere, and be productive for their business.
And how long will this digital transformation be going on? Are you looking into your crystal ball? Is this something just out there that's going to continue for a while?
Absolutely. This has been going on for many years and will be continuously evolving. If we think about it, from email to instant messaging to accessing documents from multiple devices, all that has continuously evolved. Also, let's think about it. We have smart TVs, smart thermometers, our refrigerators, our stoves, our washer and dryers, even our cars are digital devices, which are constantly evolving and changing.
Okay, and how does a digital transportation affect businesses and productivity?
Well, every business has data and information. So depending on where that data is stored and how it's accessed, this will affect productivity and even profitability. And then comes the question, is this data secure? Is this data redundant? Can we rely on it if something goes down? Is this data stored on a server or a computer or in my data center? Or is it in the cloud? Do I have a hybrid cloud? Do I have a modern workplace?
And so what would that modern workplace be?
Well, again, the modern workplace is the ability to be able to access or work with your environment or access your environment from multiple ways or multiple devices. And we can say also the goal of this modern workplace is to unleash creativity through new models of working and empowerment. And this is, again, as we said earlier, how we access and work with our company's information. And we can say that the modern workplace is like a combination of email, collaboration, operating system, and even security. Some of the primary products and technology for modern workplace include Office 365 and Microsoft 365.
Okay, so what's the difference between Office 365 and Microsoft 365?
So, good question. I'm sure many people have heard about both of these, Microsoft 365 and Office 365. So, Microsoft 365 differs from Office 365, that it provides a superset of functionality relative to Office 365. Microsoft 365 include Office 365, which includes email, collaboration, instant messaging. But Microsoft 365 also includes security and Windows 10 operating system. And this provides businesses with the ability to be able to adapt, to be innovative, but also have a secure platform to stay productive on with their business and with their best apps that they use to run their business.
Okay. And what are some other or some more details about Microsoft 365?
Well, Microsoft 365 can help small and medium-sized businesses achieve more, be more productive, be able to connect in a secure manner, and also be able to manage their users and their devices in a simplified manner. Microsoft 365 has intelligence built in, whether artificial intelligence or other products that can help secure and manage your environment. So we can see that Microsoft 365 represents a fundamental shift in how Microsoft designs, builds, delivers, and even supports these various products.
And I assume it's secure, right? Microsoft 365?
Absolutely. Security is a very major concern for many businesses and institutions, and Microsoft 365 is secure. It provides intelligent security built on all levels, on the physical layer, the network layer, the infrastructure layer, and even all the apps. And we can see there's a constant evolving cyber threat landscape which exists in the world today, constant security challenges. And these have a real impact on individuals and businesses. So Microsoft 365 has the ability to identify, block, and even tackle evolving malware and even hacking threats. So this can help keep customer data and their IP secure without impeding productivity. And with a highly compliant infrastructure, Microsoft 365 adheres to industry standards and offers advanced compliance functionality.
How does this intelligent cloud, I can do it, blah, blah, one of them days. How does the intelligent cloud come into play with digital transformation?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the Microsoft Azure Intelligent Cloud, which is the largest cloud services provider in the world. So Microsoft Azure provides flexible and cost-effective migration paths and also provides hybrid support to help customers migrate their apps, their data, and their infrastructure at their own pace with high confidence. And Azure provides hybrid connectivity to their on-premises data. So you can reach out to us, Red Level, as a Microsoft Gold partner to help with an assessment or even a proof of concept to help see what it'll take to either migrate your data or fully be at Microsoft Azure. So with your data safely secure in the cloud, this enables you to access it anytime from anywhere.
How can I test Azure?
Well, you can reach out to us, to Red Level. We'll be more than happy to perform an assessment or even do a proof of concept so you can see and even test Microsoft Azure.
And why should I do that? Why should I reach out to Red Level to help me with my digital transformation journey?
Well, we would love the opportunity to be your digital transformation partner. Just some information about us. We are a Microsoft Gold partner and a Microsoft Direct Cloud Solutions provider. We provide 24/7 managed services, and we also provide unparalleled IT services for your organization. Red Level provides a full suite of Microsoft IT services, assessments, training, design, implementation, help desk support, and even managed services. So you can reach us at redlevelgroup.com or at 248-412-8200.
Let's talk. We got a few more minutes left. Let's talk a little bit more about Red Level. I know you're a newbie there. You just came on board a couple months ago.
Yes.
What attracted you to Red Level?
What attracted me is the forward thinking of this organization. They've been around for a while. They're forward thinking. They're willing to use, try, adapt to, and also help their existing customers and new customers with these constantly evolving technologies.
And Microsoft, how did you get involved in all that area? You've been doing it for a long
boy.
Time?
Oh, boy. Microsoft. I'm going to age myself. I started very young. No, I've been working with Microsoft products probably for the last 18 to 19 years.
Wow.
And more heavily with the cloud products, going back to the BPOS days. Started working with Azure as it first started coming out. So I'm very familiar with the Office 365, Microsoft 365, like we said earlier, that integrates everything together. But I enjoy helping customers, and Red Level prides itself on helping customers to achieve greater things with the technology that's available out there.
And where would you work previously, Don? What's some of your background? I mean, folks want to know more about you, perhaps. You know?
Yeah. So my background includes doing a lot of consulting work in the cloud migration space, helping architect solutions with Microsoft solutions. I've even worked with VMware and some third-party vendors such as Amazon in the past. But heavily focusing more on Microsoft. I have worked with other Microsoft partners in the past, and just looking to get to work with a partner who's willing to look forward and willing to help their customers.
All right. And is Red Level still hiring out there? I know they're still looking for folks.
Absolutely. We're always looking for talented people in the IT department, in the IT space, network architects, solution architects, and even in our managed service desk.
And you've got that new facility that you guys moved into. I know you're only been there 2 months, but they moved into the new facility
yes.
about a year or so
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, about a year ago, yes.
And so is that more convenient for everyone? I guess not. The same town, though, wasn't it? Both of them are in Novi.
Yeah, it's in Novi, yep.
Yeah, so, but I mean, you got a lot of room out there.
Yeah, great facility. We have our operations center there. We have lots of space for training, for small conferences. We even have rooms that we can do testing and proof of concepts in. So it's a great facility, and it's a great, great work environment.
All right. So we got about 2 minutes to fill here. What do you want to talk about in terms of what are some of the exciting things out there in the Microsoft world? Like, of course, Azure and all the digital transformation, but there's some other things that really caught your eye?
Oh, yeah. I'm just attending some of the Microsoft conferences, how they're spending a lot of money in security. Microsoft, a lot of people view them as a cloud company, a desktop company, as an operating system company, but they spend a lot of money with security. And they also are spending a lot more time, money, and resources in helping their partners, such as we are, Red Level, to help their customers. So Microsoft reaches out, uses, and utilizes its partner base to help implement their products or even help train with their products.
Okay. So... where do you see all this going in, 5 or 10 years
out? Oh, boy.
I'm going to make you really look into your crystal ball.
5 to 10 years. It's hard to see what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years. Technology is constantly evolving.
Right.
I just see a more of a shift. I don't think everything is going to go 100% to the cloud. I think it's going to be a more of a hybrid strategy. But I see more and more apps, individual business applications going to the cloud instead of people running it on physical servers. Also storage. I see a lot of storage going to the cloud. So people don't have to invest in these large storage devices in their data centers possibly. And the beauty of having something like that in the cloud is you can spin it up when you need it. If there's a downturn and you maybe don't need all that information, you can temporarily spin that down, or you can even offload it if you no longer need it.
All right. Well, let's go through that one more time. If folks want to reach out to Red Level, I'll give the folks the website address, the phone number. Should they reach you directly? Can they do that?
They can. Yes, they can reach me directly, too, if they want. My email address is M. I'm going to spell my last name here. It's B as in boy, A, L, A, T as in Tom, Z, I, S. That's S as in Sam, at redlevelgroup.com. Or you can go to our website, which is redlevelgroup.com, and call us at 248-412-8200.
All right. That's Mike Baltes.
Yes.
Baltes.
Right. You're almost there. That's
right.
Good.
Hey, Baltes. Okay, got it. And he's the Red Level Microsoft Solutions Manager at, of course, Red Level in Novi. And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back shortly with Dan Lorman, who's going to scare us about what's going to happen on tomorrow's elections.
Oh, boy.
And whether there's going to be a hacking or not, the bad guys are trying to get in, and Dan will tell you all about that. And that's him now. We'll be right back.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
We're back. Third segment of M Squared TechCast. Just me today, Mike Brennan. Matt has taken today off. He's got to use his vacation, use it or lose it. So he decided to take today off. I can appreciate that. Now, Dan was talking to me between segments, and I couldn't quite make out what he said. But you said a new report came out today?
Yeah, hey, great to talk to you, Mike. Yeah, there's a new survey with talking about the election, and that 54% of Americans believe the threat of a state-sponsored attack is either elevated or imminent, specifically talking about elections. And one in five Americans are fearful of a state-sponsored cyber attack against U.S. elections. And then 63% feel that adversaries are propagating misinformation on social networks, and that poses a threat to our elections. And then just a number of other headlines here. 18 to 24-year-olds were actually least concerned. But, yeah, kind of leading into this whole topic of election security.
Yeah, and we should identify who we just were speaking with there. That's Dan Lorman with Security Mentor, who's, gosh, worked at the state for a gazillion years under a number of governors, where he was the CIOs and the CISO and all sorts of different things, weren't you?
Yeah, that was great years, and still work a lot with governments all over the country. And, yeah, so it's exciting to be able to talk today about election security.
Yeah, so, I mean, this sounds like the plot for Homeland, you know, where a year ago they had that whole thing with the trolls and the hacking and all that. I haven't seen what they're going to come out with for this year's, plot line. But this is very real. I mean, a lot of people foo-foo this, say, oh, no, nothing really happened. But you mean you have probably a much better look under the hood than I do. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on.
Sure, no, it's great. Thank you. First of all, I just want to mention that I think their opinions on this are kind of all over the map. So DHS, Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, came out end of last week and said this is going to be our most secure election ever. But there are a lot of experts out there who are claiming and saying that we're going to be seeing major problems. So, you know, you can kind of hear opinions depending on what you want to Google out there or search on. You know, that we're already seeing problems, and there's a couple of different examples that we can talk about specifically. But, you know, I interviewed a guy, I think you posted it out there, Mike, at your website, David O'Berry, who articulated, you know, some of the challenges that are being seen out there. There are still five states, for example, that still do not have paper backups. Hmm. So a lot of states, despite federal money going into this, South Carolina is one of those that still have aging voting machines, and, you know, they don't have paper backup. So you're really relying totally on electronic, counting of the votes, if you will.
I was reading a story this morning. I can't remember what the two states were. I think one was Kentucky, where they use file transfer protocol, and they still have the machines hooked up to the internet with no security passwords. And I'm thinking, this can't be right. So are states that bad?
that seems a little bit extreme. But, yeah, no, there certainly are, you know, a lot of vulnerabilities out there. And, it's not just philosophical here. I mean, like in the state of Georgia, this was a huge deal in the governor's race over the weekend. We have the Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, you know, number of reports coming out saying that their Secretary of State, that their voting machines had major vulnerabilities in it. So they were attacking the governor, you know, the governor candidate for the Republicans, Brian Kemp, was being attacked. And then he counterattacked by saying that the Democrats had hacked his campaign. So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, hacking literally going into the final weekend before elections all over the country. Really, it's showing up in a lot of different ways, really almost in every state. There's a story or two about this. We can certainly talk about Michigan, but one of the ones I wanted to highlight, Mike, you know, Kim Komando did an article back in the middle of October talking about tens of millions of voter records are being stolen, were stolen, and are now available in the dark web. And you can actually go out, and there's a website, you know, I sent you the information, you can post this for listeners. But, you know, really full name, phone numbers, physical address, voting history, databases that are out there that people can get this information being sold for, like in New Mexico, you could get their database for $4,000, in South Carolina for $2,500. This was, posted on a national webcast that Kim Komando does. She's big in USA Today and other places. So, you know, there clearly are voting records out there, the databases. What hasn't been shown is that actually votes have been changed. You know, clearly influence is happening. You know, we had the Russian influence, other nation states trying to influence elections. Database records have been, compromised and made available out there in the dark web. What we haven't seen yet is votes actually being flipped.
Yeah. Is that a possibility?
Honestly, I would say certainly you could say that it is a possibility. You've got, again, these five states with electronic, no paper backup. I will tell you in Michigan, I do want to say, because most people listening are Michigan or Midwest, and I want to highlight Michigan that, we have, I think, very good system. $11 million plus have been put into our improvements in our voting equipment in Michigan. I have a quote here from WKAR.org, did a big story on this. You can go out and read about it, talking about how safe our polling places are, but basically saying 100%, this is from Fred Woodhams, who's the point of contact for election systems, says we have a very 100% confident that Michigan's election system is secure, stating we have a very paper-based process, paper ballots, printed out on paper, multiple copies, and we have new qualified voter file that is more secure, designed with security in mind, and we've been continually testing and updating our system. So I do believe Michigan's is one of the most secure in the country. I think we've got a very good system. But is it perfect? No. I mean, are there vulnerabilities out there? I certainly think other states are more vulnerable than Michigan is, but I would say that, it is possible, especially in those states where you don't have the paper backups, that you could have, problems. But I think overall improvements have been made. I suspect you're going to see, again, my friend and colleague who I interviewed, Dave O'Berry, feels like it's going to be a widespread. It's going to be worse than 2016, which would be pretty bad because we had a lot of headlines around this in 2016. But the other people saying no, it's not going to be as bad as 2016 was. So my suspicion is you're going to see somewhere in between, but there won't be as many problems as we had in 2016.
You have a unique position as one who's been in government in lots of different capacities, is really familiar with how the systems work. Also, you are familiar with how the bad guys work. If you were going to solve this problem, each state, of course, I think it's even less. I think it's each community has their own way of doing voting. How would you fix it? Would there be a national standard that everyone would adhere to? And if so, what would those elements include?
Sure. No, I think we absolutely do need a national standard. I think each state is responsible for their own elections, so you certainly do have, you're going to have state controls. I don't think anybody wants to necessarily nationalize all elections because that could bring about other issues about, central control and is there some kind of national conspiracy or something. So I don't think federalizing all election equipment is the answer, but I do think standards that everyone must meet is the first updated equipment. I think most states know that they have equipment that needs to be updated, that needs to be have paper backup. Paper, I think that by 2020, the next presidential election, most states will be there. So I do think that is likely to be part of that. But I think, updated equipment, paper ballot backups, and then, national level of monitoring, which I think DHS is doing now. So making sure that there's good, intelligence around threats that are coming in, that people are aware of those, and they're taking steps to make sure that that any threats that are coming in are being addressed real time. I think a number of those steps are happening now. I think new money has been allocated. Like I said, we mentioned, $11 million in Michigan. Most states have gotten money from the federal government to upgrade their equipment. But I think that a lot more is going to be done in the next 2 years. I think a lot of states aren't there yet, had a late start. Really kind of, there's a lot of arguing in after the 2016 election. In 2017, a lot of states just really got going in 2018. And so I think 2019, 2020, the next 2 years leading into the presidential election, there's still a lot of work that has to be done.
So how much money more do you think needs to be spent? I mean, a lot more money? Or we're talking hundreds of millions? You know, I mean, what do we, because this is the foundation of our very democracy, that whole idea that, you know, your vote has to count, right? You know, so and people that aren't supposed to be voting shouldn't be in there. So, I mean, what do we, how much money do you think we need to spend?
Well, I think you're going to still see the same amount. You know, you're going to nationwide, it's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars, probably even over the next decade, I would say billions of dollars. Because what's going to happen, remember, is that technology is constantly changing, and you also have the bad actors are getting better all the time as well. So you plug up one set of holes, one set of vulnerabilities, just as everybody who gets involved in Patch Tuesday knows with Microsoft, right? You get one set of vulnerabilities, and then you have new vulnerabilities. You patch one set, new ones come in. New equipment, you're going to constantly need to be upgrading those. In addition, you're going to have a challenge of you know, that people are going to start, more and more people want to vote online. So, I mean, I think that's a huge challenge. Can people vote? You know, a lot of people believe, and I think probably, you know, if we can have a driverless car, and if we can have all these new, you know, artificial intelligence and robotics and all these new advances, can we, you know, vote from the comfort of our homes? Do we have to actually go out to polling places? I mean, I think we're probably almost at maybe, so I certainly don't think that's happening in 2020. Will it happen in 2024? Probably not. You know, could it happen in 2028? Maybe. I mean, I know military votes that way now from overseas. But the reality is, as that changes, as people's expectations around the process change, as we start talking about new technology, new innovations, you're going to also need new money and security to upgrade those systems. So bottom line is what I'm telling you, Mike, is it's a moving target. It's not like you can just stop things right now in 2018 and say, let's just fix those. I think that's going to be the focus for 2020. But when you start getting into the 2020s, you're going to have a moving target, and there's going to be new threats and new attacks that are going to be hitting our election system.
Do you think there should be something like a virtual private network for voting so it's not really tied into the Internet? Do you think that would be a step to keep the bad guys out?
I mean, that's possibly one solution. I think it's more complex than that. I think that, you know, people claim, in my experience in government, you know, people claim so many times. I remember even my years as a national security agency, you had so many segmented networks that weren't supposed to talk to each other, and then they plug computers into both the networks, right? Yeah. So, I mean, the reality is you create a separate network, inevitably, you know, the human element comes in. People who have access to both networks, or people put gateways between the networks, and somehow, you know, there's still communication that happens. So, I mean, that could be one of the solutions. I'm not saying a virtual private network wouldn't help, but I think it's going to be a series of technological advances that we're going to need, and in the short run, what everyone is saying, we need to have paper backup, and it's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars and more money being put in the next 2 years to get us ready for 2020.
We're going to have to leave it at that. We've got about 30 seconds left, so now I'll let you do that shameless plug for Security Mentor. How do folks reach you? How do they get in touch with your company?
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate that. I'm on Twitter, at GovCSO. I'm on LinkedIn. Please reach out to me on LinkedIn, Dan Lohrmann, LOHRMANN. And Security Mentor Incorporated, we do a security awareness training. It's gamified. It's engaging, interesting, helps you change your culture. I'm actually going to be at Secure World out in Seattle, leaving tomorrow, be out there for 2 days teaching a class on how to build a culture of security and really make that engaging and have metrics around that and measure that. So that's what we're all about, is helping people really train their employees in how to be secure.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Thanks very much, Dan Lohrmann. We'll get you back here in a month or two, and we'll evaluate how well the elections went.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike. Have a great day.
You too. We'll be right back with the next segment of M Squared Tech Ask.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launch pad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
We're back for the fourth and final segment. If I could just talk today, everything would be wonderful. I have calling in, I'm assuming, Emily Heinz. Yes. Emily, are you there?
Yes.
Ah, perfect. Okay. And she's the former associate director of the Michigan Venture Capital Association. She struck out on her own. How long has that been now? It was like the beginning of the year, right?
It's been about 7 months.
7 months. So she has a new company called Entry Point, where she helps, the entrepreneurs like us figure out how to negotiate their way through a very complex business system. But one of the things she just came out with was an interesting report that I read last week that looks at that Detroit entrepreneurial ecosystem. Shows that, 25% of all IT companies are now based in Detroit. But if I believe the other part of that was not a lot of them have any females or very few females, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we definitely are seeing that there is a flourishing entrepreneurial ecosystem, high-tech focused. So information technology as well as life sciences, mobility, advanced manufacturing. But although the entrepreneurial ecosystem is on such a high trajectory path, we are still seeing that a lot of the growth is not as inclusive as it could be, that the people of color, women, members of the LGBTQ+ community are not necessarily being incorporated into the community as much as they could be.
Hmm. Okay. What are some of the other findings that you have in your report?
Yeah, so a lot of what the research was focused on is the growth of the high-tech entrepreneurial ecosystem. And it's really not hard to see why the city of Detroit has been able to grow so quickly just in the last 5 or 10 years. Because we're seeing that there's a robust network of engineering talent. Michigan, and particularly in Southeast Michigan, there's the highest density of engineers than anywhere else in the entire country by quite a bit. We have a robust network of engineering talent. There's a lower cost of living here than there is in some of the other high-tech entrepreneurial ecosystems like Boston, San Francisco, New York, where the cost of doing business and the cost of living is generally quite a bit higher than it is here. And we're also seeing that just the proximity to corporate research powerhouses between the auto industry and the great network of universities that we have here is really a catalyst for growth in the city of Detroit.
And I'm looking at the sheet here, 8 of the top 25 entrepreneurial colleges are in Michigan. I was unaware of that.
They're not necessarily in Michigan, but within driving distance. So certainly being located in the Midwest is advantageous for a number of reasons. We do have, 8 of the top 25 entrepreneurial colleges are located within a close drive of Detroit. We're also seeing that that we have 6 of the top 20 engineering schools and 45% of the Fortune 500 are located here. So that momentum, really coupled with the fact that we have really solid research in the state, we have really solid, obviously talent base in the state, as well as the lower cost of living. And I think that really you could say that the hustle of Detroit is really rivals any major entrepreneurial ecosystem across the country.
But of course, the old supply and demand bugaboo, I'm hearing horror stories about apartments downtown fetching $2,000 a month and up. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that that could be a contributing factor to some of the things that we're talking about. You know, housing is an issue. And I think like building the network and making sure that the network of entrepreneurship in Detroit is really a network that's involving Detroiters as well as people who are looking to move to Detroit and expand businesses in Detroit. And I think that that's something that, although we're super excited to see all of the upward trends and the amount of capital that's being invested in businesses in the city of Detroit, I think what gives Entry Point and a lot of others in this ecosystem cause for concern is really the lack of diversity in the growing community.
Now, how do we solve that problem?
So I caution a lot of times people sort of say, oh, so well, there's a really big pipeline problem. And what do you expect? So you're just going to invest in, you know, businesses because they're the CEO looks like a particular gender or and I think that I want to really caution steering any conversation in that direction. I think that really what people can do is focus on really dedicating the resources necessary to broadening their networks, partnering with organizations that have the network that are out in the community, so that when you're looking for talent or you're looking for investment opportunities, you are really seeing all of the talent there is available. That you're not just seeing the people that your friend knows. You're not just seeing the person that you know. You're seeing people that you may not know of, and you're really able to attract the best talent that way. I would also say that another strategy, in addition to making sure you're broadening your network, would be making sure that when you are, you can do a web audit on your own website where you say, you know, do we look like an organization that is somewhere where a person of color or a woman would want to work? And I think a lot of that does have to do with how you're presenting yourself digitally. So I think there's strategies like that would really do a lot to helping broaden the community and really help us attract the best talent for the best positions that we have in this fast-growing community.
All right. Well, there's some interesting other studies here, information in your report, including that the 18 startups that received venture capital investment last year, 56% are IT companies, 17% science and healthcare, and the remaining were mobility, business services, consumer products. That's all good for the tech industry, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's great to see. So there's 37 active venture-backed companies located in Detroit that have raised collectively $179 million. And it's great to see that those numbers are increasing every year and that just in the last year, those 18 startups raised $41 million. And that sort of that momentum is really sticking. So it's not just companies that are coming in, getting funded and leaving. There are companies that are coming in, getting funded, hiring, growing. And I think that's really that type of momentum is really what we want to be seeing in Michigan and in Detroit.
And of course, we had a gigantic exit, about a month ago, when Duo Security out of Ann Arbor was purchased by Cisco for $2.35 billion. Yes, that's with the B. Which means a lot of people with stock options at Duo now can be potential investors, right?
Yeah, I'm super excited for John and Doug over at Duo, and I think that certainly high tech operators like them and the team that they've grown, having experience and having a little bit of extra, you know, cash in their pockets, would potentially do a lot to help continue the momentum of the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Michigan and Detroit. Duo had opened up an office in Detroit last year. So I think it's really great news for the city of Detroit as well as the rest of Michigan. But I think even larger than that, Michigan has really lacked experienced entrepreneurs and investors in the past. We have a lot of really great entrepreneurs and investors, don't get me wrong, but I think that the experience level and being able to have more people who've successfully grown, scaled, raised capital, exited a company, and, you know, are working closely with other people who are growing and scaling and exiting companies, I think is something that is going to really, really have a huge impact on Detroit and on Michigan for years and years to come.
And I would be amiss if I did not point out that next week, because I know you're heavily involved in it.
Oh, yes.
The Accelerate Michigan contest. And Timber Shea reminded me to remind you to talk about that. So we don't want to go again, Timber, you know. So
She's
small but wiry, you know. So
I'm super excited. So on November 13th is the Accelerate Michigan Innovation Competition. It's taking place at the Lexus Velodrome. Entry Point is working closely with Invest Detroit to host 240 meetings for the 24 semifinalists. So we have about 108 people that are coming in, investors, experienced entrepreneurs, industry experts, researchers who are coming in and going to be doing back-to-back meetings with the 24 companies that are in the semifinalists. And then at 4:45 p.m., we're going to have a huge dinner and sort of celebrate those 24 companies, ultimately awarding over $1 million in cash to a few of those companies, which will be really exciting to see. But I think that the companies this year have just been crazy awesome. You know, like every year they're good, but I think this year I got the most feedback from investors just being like, oh, thanks for the great companies you sent me. Like, these are so awesome. I love to review them. And I'm like, oh yeah, I totally did that on purpose, even though like every company was so good and I had nothing to do with them receiving great companies. So
yes,
I would say ticket sales are still open for Accelerate Michigan. So people can go to acceleratemichigan.org if they're interested in attending. And it's going to be super fun. So
and how much
I am really excited.
I can tell.
Yeah. Lots going on in Detroit for sure.
How much are the tickets?
$150.
Okay. And that includes the meal, I hope, for $150, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Good news.
The
yes.
meal. You know, it's a really great way to connect with the broader entrepreneurial investment ecosystem. There's 400 people that attend, all of the people that we've really worked with to hand select to meet with the entrepreneurs are going to be in attendance at the event. So we've got a lot of really, really, really great talent that's going to be there. And it's a really great way to kind of get a lay of the land. Certainly a lot of the stuff that's in the 2018 Detroit Entrepreneurial Ecosystem Report that Entry Point published, you really get to see firsthand when you're at an event like that. And so that's a lot of times why Entry Point loves to partner on those types of events, because although we're largely a research organization, we also really like to get out in the community and make those connections beyond the numbers.
All right, we got about a minute left, so I need to let you put in a shameless plug for, well, talk a little real fast. What is Entry Point? Give us a website address and then a website address for Accelerate Michigan.
Yeah, definitely. So Entry Point is a research and community engagement organization focused on the high-tech entrepreneurial ecosystem. We also have a lens, as always, on building diversity within the entrepreneurial ecosystem. You can visit our website at entrypointmi.com and also see our 2018 Detroit Entrepreneurial Ecosystem study there, which gives a good example of the type of research that we do. And I would encourage everybody to attend Accelerate Michigan on November 13th, and they can get their tickets at AccelerateMichigan.org.
Thank you, Emily Heinz, founder of Entry Point. Also, thank Dan Lorman from Security Mentor, Mike Ballistas from Microsoft Solutions, Red Level, Microsoft Solutions Manager, and Bob Liskus from the Michigan Manufacturing Technology Center. we'll be back next week, hopefully with Matt Rausch in tow. But for now, this is Mike Brennan saying thanks very much for listening to M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.